The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. We got a lot of stuff to talk about today. Lots of news to get to. And of course, the story that everybody is talking about in Seattle is what unfolded last night here.
The Big Lead. Top trending.
Still the best theme song in all of television sports. So the eyes of the nation were on Seattle last night as the Seahawks now have the best record in the entire NFL. Tied with a few other teams, but no team is better than Seattle's 10-2. And again, just like it's been all season, and I think this is what has people around here so fired up. Every single game has been filled with just absolute drama. Like even the mistake Russell Wilson made last night.
Minnesota looks like they might want to blitz. They rush five. Russ steps up. Ball is tipped up in the air. Russell slaps it away. But it's picked off. It's going to go the other way for a touchdown. Anthony Harris, the safety for Minnesota. The ball was tipped up in the air, and Russell wisely tried to slap it to the ground, and instead Harris came running out of nowhere, picked it off, and went 21 yards.
So Seahawks trailed early, but then, as they have found a way to do in almost every game this
Penny
season.
In the backfield, Metcalf, far side wide. Russell's got time. He's got David Moore wide open. Moore makes the catch. 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Seahawks. From 60 yards, Russ looked up, saw David Moore running right past Xavier Rhodes, and said, here you go. Serves it up on a platter, and the Seahawks are on top 26-17, and they're doing the hula in the end zone, the Seahawks receivers. Wow, what a big play for Seattle.
Now, I love Steve Rabel, and I think Steve Rabel is the best play-by-play guy in the NFL. But, Nicole, you knew that that was not a hula dance after that touchdown, didn't you?
Well, he's trying to describe it. So it was there was some movement of the hips, and I think that's what he was trying to describe.
I didn't know what it was. I knew that I had seen it in some of the early MTV days, and Michael Bumpus knew it was New Edition. And so, and they confirmed that after the school, that they wanted to go a little old school. And so it was New Edition.
How's Rabel supposed to know that?
But at the hula, it was clearly not a hula dance.
And said, here you go. Serves it up on a platter. And the Seahawks are on top 26-17. And they're doing the hula in the end zone, the Seahawks receivers. Wow, what a big play for Seattle.
Now I kind of want to see him do a hula dance, though.
Now, this was not when Bobby Brown was part of New Edition, was it? It was without Bobby Brown, I'm guessing.
I'm not sure.
Russell Wilson was mic'd up during that celebration.
Yeah, boy, I see what you did.
They're just having fun. And I think that's why all the fans around here are having so much fun. When you have a team that looks like they're just having a blast, it's really easy to just let go and have a blast yourself. And then when they do stuff like the fake punt, geez, I love that too.
So Michael Dixon on to punt. Hughes is deep for Minnesota. Fake punt. It's coming near side. Running the football. He's down inside Minnesota territory. It was Travis Homer. A fake punt. Michael Dixon ran like he was going to chase a bad snap. It was a direct snap to the upback, Travis Homer, who goes 29 yards.
I mean, just fun. It was just absolute fun. So the Seahawks now are in first place in the NFC West. They have a 60% chance of having one of the two best records in the NFC, which means you get a first-round playoff bye, and then you get a home game after that. And if you win that home game, then you're in the NFC Championship game. So you're just a couple games away from a Super Bowl return trip. So it was awfully fun. Dave Wyman's going to drop by and talk with us after he broadcast with Rabel that game. And one last thing. Russell Wilson, in his post-game press conference, I loved what he was saying about this team.
Experience in two Super Bowls, you know, one and one, unfortunately not winning the second one, but, you know, winning a lot of playoff games and being in them. I think we have everything we need, and I think we have everything that we want. I think ultimately what it comes down to is just the details, the small execution things. I think you got to have a clutch gene, and I think we have that as a team. You know, we have that clutch gene. We've been clutch all year. When the game's on the line with, you know, up by seven, down by four, or whatever it may be, we find a way to win them. And I think great teams, great players, they find ways to win them. And I think that we have that clutch gene. And so
clutch gene. That means it's part of your DNA. So I'll talk to Pete Carroll about that when he comes on with me on Friday. I mean, is Pete Carroll some mad scientist who's actually altering the DNA of his players now? And he can actually install a clutch gene in them? So I'll find out from Pete. That's my new theory.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So anyway, awfully fun. And now the Seahawks have another primetime game. Sunday night, you'll hear it right here on your home of the Seahawks as they take on the Rams in Los Angeles. I'll be on the air with all my pregame co-hosts at 2 o'clock Sunday afternoon for another primetime matchup for the Seahawks. And then just a little side note. I don't want to make this about me. But the Washington State Department of Transportation's revenge against me for supporting 976. It continued last night after the game.
Wow, what was going on last night?
Because I'm exhausted. Because I did our show from the stadium. Then I go straight from that into a three-hour pregame. And then I'm working while watching the game. I'm working on today's show. And then we do a three-hour postgame. So I get out of there at, you know, 11:30 or so. I'm pretty dog tired.
Yeah, it's been about
a 12-hour day.
Oh, more than that.
Well, yeah. You know, it's been a 18-hour day because it started 6 a.m. So anyway, I'm going home and my exit's closed. And I'm starting to have no doubt that they know my route to get to everywhere. They knew that there was a Monday night game and the state DOT closed my exit. But they didn't have any signs announcing it was closed. And then the only way I'd go up to Linwood to turn around.
I know your exit. Can't you just take the next one?
No, because the next one is goes on to my exit westbound.
Yeah, but right after that.
Because from that ramp, it doesn't go to that exit.
Hmm.
It goes underneath that exit, so you have to get back on I-5. And I guess it went to Mount Lake Terrace.
Okay, yes, that makes more sense.
But yeah, I'm pretty sure that they know my schedule. They know where I live. They know
they're out to get you.
They are out to get me. I have no doubt about it.
A little bit more difficult.
I'm dog tired, and they said this would be a good time to get them for supporting 976. I didn't care. Seahawks won. I was floating on a cloud anyway. Okay, with that as mere prelude, the fun story of the day. Let's get some of the serious stuff that's going on as we continue our big lead.
The big lead. Top story.
So right before we left for the four-day Thanksgiving weekend, we had the story of what they were calling a disturbing attack outside of the King County Courthouse. A man got off a bus on 3rd Avenue and attacked a defense attorney, just randomly, who was walking on the sidewalk. And it's just out of control, these random attacks. The man was from Georgia. I know they've told us that all the people who are on the streets are the kids who grew up with you, and they've just fallen on some hard times. Let's raise your taxes to help your old childhood chums. But the reality, of course, is these are people who are coming from Arizona and Texas and Georgia and from all around the country because the greater Seattle area, the Puget Sound area, is the easiest place in the country to be a heroin addict and to be a street vagrant and to be a drug user. And so This guy just continued attacking the defense attorney. A Metro bus driver tried to intervene. He was attacked as well. Finally, a marshal had to tase the guy and subdue him until other officers arrived. He was arrested for felony assault on the bus driver, misdemeanor assault on the attorney. They said he appeared to be homeless and in need of mental health evaluation. But this guy, Frank Hippolyte, he recently came to Seattle from Georgia. He's been arrested 5 times on the same block as the courthouse, including 2 other assaults. And so, does anybody think we're on the right track around here? Legalizing drugs, not prosecuting people who commit crimes, not jailing people who commit repeat assaults, because we have city and county prosecutors who, county prosecutors, some of them are doing a really great job. But we also have activist judges who have decided that it's better for the criminals for them to be on the street than in jail. And they're making decisions without thinking about their next victims. And they tell me they can't. They can't project. But Channel 4, ComoNews.com, talked with Judge Sean O'Donnell about what it's going to take before we see some change down there.
We have reached a crisis point with conditions on 3rd Avenue in front of the courthouse. Does someone have to die for there to be a response? I don't know. We keep saying it, and the status quo remains.
I do know. The answer is yes. Either somebody has to die, and I really hate saying this, but it's the only other thing that would inspire change. The loved one of one of our decision makers or one of our decision makers would have to be attacked. Then we might see change. But they now just have, and it's obvious and it is such a repeated pattern, they have such callous disregard for all of the rest of us. And I saw what it was like. I only did one day of jury duty this summer. But I had to use that 3rd Avenue entrance at the courthouse. And it's I don't want to use hyperbole. It's not a war zone outside of there. But it ain't a first world block on 3rd Avenue in front of the courthouse. There are people screaming and wailing and violent and threatening and committing crimes. It is not a first world street in downtown Seattle. And I saw that with my own eyes. And then we have these head in the sand Seattle City Council members like Sally Dime Bagshaw, who says,
and DESC told me just a few weeks ago that they've only had 2 necessary 911 responses there.
Our check showed 84 calls for the fire department this month. The number of police calls was not readily available.
So Sally Bagshaw said only 2 911 calls, and Channel 4 said, well, we found 84 calls. So as long as you have politicians who are going to just make up stats, then we have no chance of things getting better. And then you got Jenny Durkin. What a piece of work she's turned out to be as mayor.
I've asked the judge to come and talk to us. Our responses for people in crisis on that 3rd Avenue corridor has shifted. We have police doing different emphasis there.
Jenny Durkin, who, by the way, I have yet to confirm this, but a listener emailed me this morning and claimed that she saw Jenny Durkin at her Maui Oceanfront Resort this morning. So I'm working to confirm that. But I looked, it's an expensive resort, and she ain't paying for the cheapest room with her partner worth $100 million. So if that's true, you know, Jenny Durkin can get away from it all. And she has armed protection. She doesn't have to worry about, you know, what happens to the little people, the working people. She doesn't care about them. So anyway, their new strategy is they're going to close the third. this is so typical. They're going to close the 3rd Avenue entrance to the King County Courthouse, which is where, since I just used it this last summer, it's all set up. They have lockers if you have to store a gun. They have metal detectors you have to walk through. They have the TSA bag screeners, so you can't smuggle weapons into the courthouse. So now they're going to have to move all of this equipment up to the 4th Avenue entrance, apparently, because their solution, and you see, here's the difference between me and them. My solution would be, we're going to get zero tolerance on all these street vagrant drug-using criminals, and we're going to clean up the street. Their solution is, oh, we're just going to let the drug-using street vagrant criminals take over the street, and we'll just go around them. I'm serious. That's the difference between a normal, because I'm guessing, since you listen to this radio show, I'm guessing you have a brain that actually functions somewhat normally. And you probably, like I, would say, hey, we're going to crack down. We're not going to let the criminals take over the street. We're not going to move an entire courtroom or courthouse entrance to an entirely different block because we're letting the criminals take over. We're going to clean up the street. We're going to crack down, and we're going to put the criminals in jail. That's how a normal person thinks. That's how I think. That's how you probably think. But politicians, oh, can we just move the entrance to 4th Avenue? If 3rd Avenue's bad, then it's bad. We'll just, let's let the criminals have 3rd Avenue. And maybe it'll stay contained. No, it's going to move to 4th Avenue. It's going to move to 2nd Avenue. And it's going to spread from Pioneer Square up to Westlake Park. Because you're letting the criminals take over. The inmates are running the asylum, literally, in this region. And that is your big lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Okay, more on this subject. I talked to a judge on Wednesday and said, what's up with letting these criminals run free? A local law enforcement commander listened to my interview, wants to respond. And he will, next, on the Dory Monson Show. Well, if you were listening last week, I've heard so many cops who are so frustrated with our judicial system, the revolving door of justice. And it all kind of came to a head a week ago yesterday, when a guy who had been released just a couple weeks earlier on personal recognizance, even though prosecutors had requested a $5,000 bond, he stole a truck with a dog inside. There was a police chase that ensued, and the criminal was shot and killed when he started dragging cops down the road in the stolen truck. And I talked to the King County Superior Court presiding judge, Rogers, and he gave their reasons why they are releasing these guys. And I wanted to give somebody on the police side of things a chance to respond to what the judge told me. So let me welcome back to the show. He's the police commander in Black Diamond. Larry Colagiovanni joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Commander, always great to talk with you.
Good to be with you again, Dory.
Did you hear my interview with Judge Rogers by any chance?
I did.
Okay, so he was giving me, and he wasn't speaking for the judge who released this guy who stole the truck in your town, but he said that they, in fact, let me play for you a clip. It's a little longish clip, but I want to give you a chance to respond to this. He said that the judge had info that this guy was working and had family support, and that's why they released him.
The defense lawyer brought up that he had a pending warrant from Black Diamond for $2,500. And he had had prior warrants in his earlier case, but that he had a job in a restaurant and that he had family member giving him financial support. So, you know, you're looking at limited information with a judge who hears that he does have a warrant, which he's going to have to go back in custody and address, and he has to get out in front of the Black Diamond court. He has to actually appear, and he apparently did get out, although I don't, frankly, have the records on that. He has prior warrants, but on the other hand, it looks like Mr. Chilcott now has a job, and he has somebody who's helping him out financially. So the judge essentially, and I've listened to the court hearing, said, you have prior warrants, but I'm going to let you out on this offense. But if you blow it once, you're going back to jail. And that was the decision the judge made.
Okay. So essentially he said they were going to give him a second chance because he had a job at a restaurant. What do you know about all this?
Mr. Chilcott has not been employed at that restaurant for months, if not at least a year. He was working at a local restaurant for a while, but in the last few months, he's been staying in a shack with no power, no plumbing. It's a tool shack on somebody's property. So as far as we know, he had no employment. For sure, he was not working at the restaurant anymore that he had been at a while ago. And, you know, I would say that, you know, it's great that the defense attorney claimed that he had a job, but was there any questioning about, okay, Mr. Chilcott, prove that you're employed?
Yeah, just show us a pay stub. Yeah.
Yep. And it, you know, listening to Judge Rogers, who I have the utmost respect for, and I didn't want to get in a tit for tat, but I just wanted to emphasize the importance of maybe the presiding judge is doing a little bit more work, that they seem to have taken Mr. Chilcott's word for it. Or, you know, I don't know, did a family member call in and say, hey, you know, he is employed, here's where he's working at? I didn't see any evidence of that. And it just seems like they took his word.
Well, it seems like if you have a lifetime offender who has never shown any interest in showing up for court dates, and I said this to the judge, why not just keep the $5,000 bond? And that would show that a family member would have some willingness to vouch that he'll just show up for his court hearing. And they never really answered why they wouldn't do that. And it just seems like the system, Commander, is completely skewed toward the criminal and not toward the potential and almost certain victims that there will be once these criminals get out.
It absolutely is. And, you know, it's interesting because one of the things that the judge said, he kept harping on, one of the things that he would look at is, does the person have a history of warrants when he decides if he's going to remand the person? The judge admitted Mr. Chilcott had a history of warrants. In fact, he had a pending arrest warrant out of Black Diamond. And ultimately, he was the judge said that it was his understanding that Mr. Chilcott willingly took care of that warrant in Black Diamond. That was not correct. What happens is when somebody's in the county jail and they're released, and they have a pending warrant from another jurisdiction, the county jail will call us and say, hey, Black Diamond, for instance, we have this person, we're releasing him, do you want him? And that's what happened in this case. So Mr. Chilcott didn't willingly take care of the warrant. We went and picked him up at the county jail. Hmm. Now, ultimately, he was released on his own recognizance on our warrant as well. However, I don't really think it's a city's responsibility to keep a felon, somebody that has pending felony charges, in the city's custody. That should be the county's responsibility, because if not, we, the city, absorb the cost again of housing somebody on a misdemeanor warrant in a local jail,
right,
as opposed to the county.
And King County has shown no willingness to enforce these laws and the punishment and the bail or the bond requests. And that's where, and so since this guy got out, Chilcott, cops were at risk. Innocent people on the road during the high-speed chase were at risk, and it ultimately cost Chilcott his life because of the decisions he made, but also because of the decisions the judge made.
Correct. And, you know, the judge really did a good job of outlining the framework that judges look at when they're going to release somebody on their own recognizance on a property crime. And the first two things he said, one was a history of failing to appear. The second one was likelihood of committing a violent act. And the third was intimidation of witnesses. Well, in our case, Mr. Chilcott, we didn't have to worry about number three with witness intimidation. But the first two definitely apply. We have a history of failing to appear. The judge admitted Mr. Chilcott has a history of warrants. And then the likelihood of committing a violent act. But what the judge kept saying on, and I'm honestly, frankly, sick of hearing this, is property crime, property crime, property crime.
Right.
Well, this was malicious mischief. This isn't a kid walking down the road who hits a mailbox with a hammer and damages it. The act that led to the charge of malicious mischief was a violent act. It was in the back of our car, kicking the door so much that it did $2,000 worth of damage. And he was also, don't forget, he was also charged with resisting arrest and obstructing law enforcement. And the resisting arrest charge came from a violent act.
Yeah, you guys had to tase him to get him into custody. And then once you had him in custody, that's when he did all the damage to your police car.
Correct. I mean, it seems this, like the judges, from what I understand from what Judge Rogers said, they specifically look at like the RCW or the statute. And they have, okay, malicious mischief is a property crime. Therefore, we're going to look at releasing somebody on their own. They really, in my opinion, need to look at the circumstances leading up to that charge. And in this case, you know, of the framework the judge talked about, you have two out of the three criteria to have kept him in custody on the $5,000 bond.
Absolutely. And then the other thing I said is the cops were certain this guy was going to reoffend. And you guys, the judges, you let him out. And I also think that the cops who are on the streets with these criminals on a daily basis, I think that, you know, while we can't just take a cop's word on it, but when you take the cop's word and combine it with all of the material evidence you just mentioned, the nature of the crime, the violent resistance, the damage to your police car, I think you take all of that and you have a compelling reason to have kept this guy locked up, and now he's dead because they let him out.
Yeah, and Dory, exactly. I'm just asking that judges take into account the circumstances that led up to the charge, as well as the person's past history. And Judge Rogers mentioned that Mr. Chilcott's most recent convictions were two misdemeanors.
Right.
And I kind of wanted to elaborate on that a little bit because, yes, one of them was an assault for conviction. But that was a plea. He was originally charged with assault three, which to a law enforcement officer, for assaulting one of my officers. So that case drug on for quite a while, probably a year and a half, because Mr. Chilcott continued to fail to appear every time he got released and got a new court date. So once we finally were able to get him back in custody, we, the department, agreed, since our officer wasn't injured, thank God, we agreed to allow him to plead guilty to assault four and driving under the influence. So if we can't just look at it and go, oh, he had an assault for conviction, that's a minor conviction. Again, we have to look at the circumstances that led up to him pleading guilty to the assault for
a
violent act.
Because they're pleading things down all the time because it's the path of least resistance to clearing the books.
Exactly. And you know, and our officers, I mean, again, you know, kudos to the prosecutor's office. They didn't just plead the case down. They checked with my officer, are you okay with us pleading this down? And he was. We were in total agreement with it. But again, if you look black and white, sure, assault for conviction,
yeah.
Who knows what it is. But just turn the page a little bit and ask the question, maybe the judge of the prosecutor, hey, what is this assault for conviction about? Oh, that was a pled down assault three on a law enforcement officer.
Yeah.
And maybe that would have, you know, in this case, had the judge go, ah, you know what? Kicking out patrol car windows, had to be tased, already assaulted a cop a couple years ago, history of warrants. Yeah, I think I'll keep you in.
Yep, now that makes a lot of sense. Well, look,
yeah,
I was happy to get the judge perspective on this, but as always, I love getting law enforcement's perspective because you guys are the ones putting your lives on the line dealing with the criminals out there, and I appreciate that very much, and I wish that cops' perspective was more taken into account when these guys get kicked into the judicial system.
Exactly, Dor. And, you know, lastly,
yeah,
it really is. It's just a failure of the system in general, I think, the mental health system, the drug treatment system, the criminal justice system. And all this, most of us in law enforcement are asking for, can we just get together and take a look at the system and see if we can come up with some ideas to better protect the citizens from these violent offenders? That's all we're asking for is some dialogue.
And all I'm asking for is for everybody to look at the way things are right now today and ask, is the path we're on working? Because it's obvious to all of us that it ain't working. And they continue to go down this ridiculous path of giving the criminals every benefit of the doubt. So, well, Commander, I always appreciate your perspective on all of this, and we will definitely stay in touch.
Thanks, Dory. I appreciate it.
Okay, thanks so much. Black Diamond Police Commander Larry Colagiovanni with us. Love to hear your thoughts. You can text me at 98973. That's 98973. Lots more straight ahead on the Dory Monson Show. You know, as we've been hearing from our governor, Jay Inslee, for years now, global warming is an existential threat. All the Democrat presidential candidates are telling us that Donald Trump is an existential threat. And I guess since lefties are using that word, there's no such thing as just a normal threat anymore. Everything is existential. So dictionary.com has just chosen its word of the year, and it's existential, which is, again, you just have a bunch of nuts on the left who have decided to use that nonsense word to try to amp up the terror of threats. And with global warming, oh, what an existential threat that is. We just heard in the last Democrat debate that now we have 7 years. Was it Bernie who amped it up to 7 years? I thought we had 9 to 12 years before we all die. But now I think it's down to 7 years, they're telling us. You know, the face of the climate change activism is Greta Thunberg, who came to the United Nations to you know, sternly lecture us, the 16-year-old girl.
How dare you? You have stolen my dreams and my childhood with your empty words. And yet, I'm one of the lucky ones.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Greta. I didn't mean to. But you know how tough it would be to mow my yard with a push mower? It would be really difficult. Anyway, Greta Thunberg, she won't fly because of her commitment to global warming. So she takes luxury sail yachts around the world. Only one real problem. The skipper of the yacht, they had to fly in a woman from the UK to the United States to sail the 48-foot catamaran, the La Vagabond. And they said the voyage is supposed to save 2 to 3 tons of carbon dioxide emissions, but the skipper's flight to the U.S., most likely produce the same amount. So you take the sail yacht to show how woke you are, but then you have people fly in to sail it that uses everybody bit as much. I mean, of course it does. If the girl had just flown home, of course that would have taken the same amount as skipper flying from UK to the US. And then there's this. There's all kinds of exciting global warming news. The Secretary General of the United Nations, Antonio Guterres, the climate summit began yesterday. And he said in his statement, pollution associated with climate change has already claimed 7 million lives. Where? Where have 7 million lives? There's nothing to back up that number. It's completely made up. Like almost everything from the global warming cult. But it might not be global warming anymore. Because, oh, I should save this for the Fast 15. But they now want to change it to global meltdown. Because people are not terrorized enough by global warming. Are you scared yet? Fastest 15 is next.